Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, 50 years since the first American unmanned soft landing on the moon. And as the last man to walk on the moon leaves Melbourne, we relive that exciting event of the first landing by rebroadcasting the landing commentary. And we chat with an Australian who helped make this event an outstanding success. Here's a taste of what's to come.
All righty. Well, this is coming up the 50th anniversary of Surveyor 1 landing, June 66. I got the job at Tidbinbilla in February 1966 after working 5 years at Laverton on aircraft flight testing. And arrived there on Decimal Currency Day as the Deputy Station Director. My job was to be in charge of operations. I might say at the outset, I'm not an expert on the spacecraft, on Surveyor, but I know a reasonable amount about it, but it is 50 years since. The Surveyor spacecraft was conceived in about 1960, 61 or thereabouts. Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles were the main contractors at El Segundo, near the airport there. It had an ambitious set of aims in regard to science and numbers. Also, a mobile version was considered, but so that latter never happened. They did some landing tests, but there were never any way to do an all-up landing test on a simulated moon. So there were many technologies and techniques that were untried in that flight. There'd been no successful Centaur rockets reigniting in parking orbit. So there were fairly low expectations on the launch system, let alone the spacecraft. Eventually, they got back to the first mission being just engineering to prove that the system could work, and it was launched 30th of May 1966. Okay, anyway, Tidbinbilla was the main Australian station tracking Surveyor. There was one other tracking station in Australia at that time at Woomera, or near Woomera, known as Deep Space Station 41. It was doing a complementary mission, the Lunar Orbiter, taking pictures from orbit. And in that era, you had specialized equipment at each station, so you could only support the one particular spacecraft from one particular station. My job there at Tidbinbilla in that era was, as I say, as the Deputy Station Director. I was Public Service Department Supply, and the policy then was that the department provided the operations supervisor. So that was my job that I was thrown into the deep end on. Surveyor was preceded by Ranger. Again, they were projects run by JPL.
That's Mike Dinn, former director of the Canberra Deep Space Station at Tidbinbilla, just outside of Canberra. And we'll hear more from Mike later in the show. Now, winding back to 1966... Luna 9 was launched by the Soviet Union on 1966, January the 31st, and landed on the moon several days later on February the 3rd. That was on the Ocean of Storms. It sent back nine panoramic pictures, and that was the first time a spacecraft had landed softly on the moon. Of course, quite a few before had crashed into the moon, but that was the first successful soft landing. Then Surveyor 1 was launched by the United States in 1966 on May the 30th, or May the 31st, depending where you were in the world. Events in space are logged by universal time, and so the launching was on May the 30th at 2:40 p.m. universal time, which was May the 31st at 12:40 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Then, after a trip to the moon, it landed on June the 1st, if you were in California, But if you were going by Universal Time, it was on June the 2nd at 6:17 a.m. And here in Australia, at Eastern Time, it was 4:17 p.m. So the date in the history books, sometimes you read it as June the 1st, based on what it was at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. And other history books give it as June the 2nd, which was the Universal Time. Well, we're now going to go back to the commentary, the live commentary that was made at the time of Surveyor 1 landing on the moon.
This is George Herman at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, where 15 months ago, the last of the Ranger series, as you've seen, scored that signal success before crashing into the moon. Tonight, Surveyor 1, first of a new series of U.S. moon probes designed to soft land on the moon, is making its final approach, aiming at a spot on the moon less than 600 miles from where the burned-out remains of Russia's Luna 9 set back to Earth the first surface pictures of the moon some 4 months ago. You are listening over my voice, perhaps, to the voice of Dr. Albert Hibbs in the control room, giving final information. What he has been telling us so far is that Surveyor 1 has been put through a perfect preliminary maneuver. It has already been commanded to turn, to roll, to maneuver itself into its final attitude, in which it will fire its retro rockets to slow it down as it makes its way rapidly towards the moon. The time to firing of the retro rockets, about 12 minutes. The time to touch down on the Earth, as you saw, about 14 and a half minutes now. This is not the only space operation of the day. On the Cape, Cape Kennedy, the ATDA, the target vehicle for Gemini 9, blasted off on schedule, but there may be a problem. The aerodynamic shrouding, which protected it on its takeoff through the atmosphere, still seems to be in place. This may make it useless for the astronauts for any rendezvous and docking. And of course, as you've heard, Gemini 9 did not take off. A recent announcement from the Cape says that NASA engineers determined the two logic modules in the inertial guidance systems failed, and says NASA they have been replaced and are now undergoing systematic tests, and the flight has been rescheduled for 8:39 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday morning. The tests conducted by the monitoring personnel here at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory on Surveyor 1 have shown everything working in good style. All the temperatures are within the required parameters. All the speeds are approximately as expected. There's a very intricate table of speeds for the vehicle as it approaches the moon. About now, it should be approaching the moon at a speed of about 4,500 miles an hour, accelerating continuously under the weak gravitational pull of the moon as it moves towards it. Its altitude, perhaps 1,100, perhaps 1,200 miles off the surface of the moon. Surveyor's soft landing techniques have not yet been tested. There's no place on the Earth with a vacuum or with the moon's low gravity, 1/6 of our gravitational pull here on the Earth. The closest thing to a test of the system was conducted on the New Mexico desert, and CBS News correspondent Terry Drinkwater was on the spot.
On the moon most likely looks like this. At Holloman Air Force Base, the craft was dropped from a balloon to fall towards Earth. The main retro rocket has already been ejected. The craft is now traveling at about 50 miles an hour. Three controllable rocket engines slow the descent. Two radar devices on board tell the tiny rocket engines how much thrust they should expend. The rate of descent becomes slower and slower until the Surveyor is traveling at 3.5 miles an hour. Then at 14 feet above the landing site, the engines are cut off. The Surveyor falls the remaining distance and soft lands at about 8 miles an hour. When it hit on the New Mexico desert, there was a cloud of sand and dust. But when it lands on the moon, the Surveyor will weigh far less than it does on Earth because the moon has so little gravity. Scientists expect there will be less dust on the moon, too. And they'll know for sure when the Surveyor takes its first pictures.
Surveyor 1, now 63 hours and 24 minutes into its historic mission, hopefully for a soft landing on the moon, everything going extremely well, the target spot. The final estimation is that the Surveyor will land within 8 miles of the target spot. 9 minutes approximately to ignition of the retro rocket, that solid-fueled rocket which will slow it down and bring it to a slow speed for a final landing on the moon.
Now what you're going to hear in the next part is the actual landing, the descent and touchdown. Now partway through you'll hear a sound like a mains hum. Now, this is telemetry. If this stops, that's bad news, because then either the rocket engine has exploded or Surveyor has crashed into the moon. Now, if the telemetry hum continues after the touchdown time, then that's good news, because it means the landing has been successful.
There is Dr. Al Hibbs giving us the word.
We are now turning on the thermal controls for the fuel tank burnier line, tank number 2. Then the oxidizer tank 2, lines 1, burnier lines 1, oxidizer tank 2, thermal control power is off. Vernier lines 3, oxidizer tank 3, thermal control power off. Power is off on the vernier lines for tanks 1, 2, and 3.
A test of the vernier engines, the three engines, which will determine the final speed and angle of approach of Surveyor 1 as it attempts this first American soft landing on the moon. The trickiest leg of Surveyor's journey is this approach to, and hopefully, this soft landing on the moon. Surveyor has coasted to less than 1,000 miles of the moon. It turns around on command from the Earth to put it into the proper landing position. Its three legs are to be pointed toward the moon, and that includes also, of course, the big retro rocket and the radar antenna. Surveyor's speed increases to more than 6,000 miles an hour as the moon's weak gravity tugs at the spacecraft. At this point, when this point comes, Surveyor will have to do its own thinking, although there is a backup system here on Earth. There's not time enough for all the backup information to do the job, so much of it must go through radar and computers on board the spacecraft. The altimeter sends out signals, radar signals to the moon. When it senses Surveyor is only 52 miles, it automatically orders the firing of the large retro rocket. The three smaller vernier rockets, which you heard being tested out before, hold Surveyor steady, aim it to the proper degree for an absolutely vertical landing. The spacecraft slows down from 6,000 to 250 miles an hour, and the burned-out retro rocket is ejected. Its job is done. The vernier rockets have taken over, continuing to slow the spacecraft down to within 2,500 feet of the moon. Radar signals again checking the distance. Continuously checked by radar, not only for distance, but for correct attitude, correct rate of speed. A few feet away from the moon, the vernier rockets cut off, and Surveyor 1 falls. It falls, landing at a speed of about 14 feet per second, which sounds a lot, but actually, here on Earth, it's about the equivalent of what you hit the ground with when you jump off of a chair or a table or a desk, about a little over 3 feet. Everything continues normal. All systems go. Time now, 5 minutes and about 15 seconds to retro fire. From retro fire to the actual touchdown, approximately 3 minutes. There's the beep, which tells us once again that we'll be hearing from Dr. Hibbs some word from the control center, Surveyor control here, on the progress.
The AMR power will be turned on. 4, 3, 2, 1, mark. The command has gone to turn on the altitude marking radar power.
Altitude marking radar to determine the height above the moon and the speed of the approach.
To be sent next is thrust phase electrical power turn on.
Everything approximately on schedule. The schedule at this point is almost automatic.
The altitude marking radar is on.
Altitude marking radar, a critical point. The altitude marking radar is vital to the success of Surveyor 1's landing.
20 seconds for the thrust phase power.
And again now, about 4 minutes to firing, actual firing of the big solid fuel retro rockets.
3, 2, 1, mark. The command has gone to turn on thrust phase electrical power. Telemetry indicates it is on.
Another milestone. You can hear perhaps the faintest shadow of relief in the professional voice of Dr. Hibbs as he reports another successful.
We are now 3 minutes and 30 seconds from retro ignition.
The time of the impact on the moon has changed from time to time during the course of the evening, but by the most fractional amounts.
To go to the 1 minute 30 seconds. Correction, 1 minute 30 seconds to enable the altitude marking radar. Incidentally, a slight change from my previous announcements. I will be giving you descent speeds in miles per hour during the descent of the retro phase. Altitudes in feet, speeds in miles per hour.
At this point, the altitude should be on the order of 205 miles above the surface of the moon. The velocity should be about 5,600 miles per hour.
When that switch is thrown, then the next time that radar sees something that looks like the moon at the right altitude, it'll turn on the retro. up until that switch is thrown, it cannot initiate the retro, even if it accidentally gets a wrong signal.
In other words, Surveyor 1, still under the control of the Goldstone station here, still under the control of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, as it speeds rapidly, approaching 5,800 miles an hour towards the surface seconds. Of the moon.
Before we enable the altitude marking radar, at 14 minutes and 37 seconds after 11, the emergency signal will be sent to back up the marking radar's mark.
Once again, double security.
10 seconds to go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark.
A critical pause.
Telemetry indicates it is now enabled.
Very good. This means that now Surveyor 1 is under its own brain power.
We are now 1 minute and 30 seconds away from expected retro ignition.
And at this point, it's in the hands of the computer aboard Surveyor 1. The radar, the computer, and the rocket guide it from here on. And ignition only about a minute and 14 seconds away. This is the critical moment. This is the critical few moments, actually.
We're 60 seconds from the expected time when we get that first mark. From then on, there will be a 30 seconds to go.
30 seconds to retrofire.
20 seconds to go before we expect the marking radar to turn on to send its mark. 10 seconds waiting for the marking radar. 4, 3, 2, 1, mark. We should now get verification of the marking signal.
And what you are AMR hearing mark. Is the actual sound of the telemetry from the rocket, from the spacecraft. The main rocket has fired.
Retro is now firing.
Retro rocket is firing. A critical item. And a sudden burst of applause here in the auditorium at the Jet Propulsion.
We are now at 5,148 miles an hour. Down to 116,000 feet, 4590. 6G
velocity. 30 seconds of flight.
Now down to 63,000 feet, 4,900. 3,900 miles per hour. 8 G's acceleration. We are now at 30,000 feet.
Retro burnout confirmed.
Retro burnout is confirmed.
Just on the nose.
32,000 feet.
Almost exactly on the predicted
400 feet per second vertical velocity. 28,000 feet.
425 feet per second.
24,000 feet. Engineering commutator 3 has been turned on. We are in lock with the engineering 3 data. Strain gauges are reading out. These strain gauges will give us indication about touchdown.
400 feet per second.
400 feet per second.
12,000 feet.
12,000 feet.
Well within the parameters.
10,000 feet. All signals are normal.
8,000
feet.
250
feet per second. 8,000 feet. 200 feet per second.
12, good.
An extraordinary moment. That may be in the making here, one of the most surprising and dramatic successes of the United States space program.
All signals look good. 4,000 feet, stable.
4,000 feet, stable.
And stable. That was a key word. Unknown was the effect of the possibly not extended
1,000 foot mark.
1,000 foot mark.
800 feet.
38 seconds to go.
400 feet. 200 feet.
100 feet per second.
100 feet.
100 feet.
13 feet per second speed.
Perfect.
Touchdown.
Absolutely perfect. All now depends on the stability, the attitude stability of the Surveyor 1.
Signal strength is reported at minus 125.5 dBm. We'll now await further indication on the condition of the Surveyor.
The Surveyor has landed.
phase power is being turned off. That has been commanded. Thrust phase power is off.
Astonishing success of Surveyor 1, which was supposed to be the first of four tests of our ability to see if we could land a Surveyor craft softly on the surface of the moon. So far, all indications are astonishing. The Surveyor is on the surface of the moon. It is broadcasting signals. It appears to be undamaged. Still unknown whether it will be able to erect all the proper apparatus, the large antenna, the high-gain antenna needed for good signal.
That's the radar system that controlled the final touchdown is now being turned off. Press. That is now off.
The Surveyor program, for all its criticism, has successfully done in this one shot something that it took the Soviet Union nine tries, nine lunar firings to accomplish, a soft landing on the moon. What remains to be seen is whether it is a further success in the sense that we will get acceptable and useful pictures from the surface of the moon. This was one of the, I think it's fair to say, most unexpected, most dramatic successes. A NASA official told us a little earlier this evening, a surprising quote, that the amount and the extent of the confusion here at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory Auditorium could probably be attributed to the fact that nobody expected it to be so successful. They had not planned on success. They had covered most of the contingencies of how they would explain failure. Now they find themselves with a magnificent success to explain, to detail, and to show to the world. The first major test, first a major experiment, is a picture of one of the three tripod footpads to see whether it has sunk in. We have here, if I can reach it, things are kind of strewn around here. This is actually, wait a second, let's listen to Dr. Hibbs.
We're getting good engineering commutator 2 data.
Good data, still. Every single aspect that has been tested has been magnificently successful in this landing of Surveyor 1 softly on the surface of the moon.
Now, in that commentary there, it was stated that it took the Soviet Union 9 tries to land on the moon. Now, that's not correct, because the first lunars were not any attempt at all to land on the moon. They were attempts to hit the moon, crash land onto the moon, or to orbit the moon and take photographs. So what were the actual landing attempts? Well, in 1965, April the 10th, Luna 5F even failed to get into orbit, so the launch was not successful. That was followed in 1965, May the 9th, by Luna 5, and it crashed into the Sea of Clouds on May the 12th. On June the 8th of 65, Luna 6, but it's made a course correction on the way, as is quite common on trips to the moon or the planets, but the engine failed to switch off and it missed the moon by about 160,000 kilometers and went into heliocentric orbit. Heliocentric orbit is an orbit around the sun, just like the Earth is an orbit around the sun. So it became an artificial planet. Luna 7 was launched in 1965, October the 4th. It retrofired to land on October the 7th, but 6 minutes later, transmissions ceased. The analysis showed that the retro rocket had fired too soon, and that was crashing into the ocean of storms. Luna 8, 1965, December the 3rd, their retro rocket switched on a fraction of a second too late, again resulting in a crash into the ocean of storms. So if you count those failures, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 failures before the success of Luna 9. The first picture to come back from Surveyor was a low-resolution one, a 200-line scan, sent back half an hour after the landing.
The first picture that this television camera will take, it will turn its head, tilt its mirror, and take a picture of this footpad. The question is, will the footpad be buried deep in dust? Will there be a drift of lunar dust, as some scientists have speculated? Will it show by its position in the dust that the soft surface of the moon is tricky, is dangerous, is going to be something very difficult that our Apollo astronauts will have to look for? Or will it, on the other hand, perhaps be supported partly off the crust? May part of it be on a rock and the rest of it off the ground, showing that the crust beneath the rock was hard, strong, and can safely support a considerable weight of an Apollo astronaut and his lunar excursion module when it touches down on the surface of the Earth. That is to be the subject of the first picture. However, the first picture may not be, this picture of this tripod, may not be of usable quality, because in addition to the problem of photographing the tripod footpad itself, the first picture is really a test of the camera. It has to be lined up, its aperture tested, its focus tested, its entire engineering and mechanics tested. Now, CBS News correspondent...
The station has right now reported itself ready. The station has reported itself ready to receive 200-line television. And the command link between the operations area here in Pasadena and the Goldstone site has now been turned over to the space science chief, Jack Lindsley, who will now direct the commands for the first television picture. He is now directing the station to turn on the camera power. That has been sent. Camera power command on has been transmitted. The next command will be the telemetry indicates it's on. The next command is going out to turn on the 200-line mode of transmission in the spacecraft. We are awaiting verification of that mode, and next command will be to turn on the Iris servo motor. That is now being sent. It is sent. We are now waiting. The next command will be to start the frame. The camera is now warming up. We are standing by for the start frame command. Now waiting the start frame command.
Lights being turned off, television lights and room lights, so that the picture as it comes from the moon can be projected on the screen for all the newsmen and the guests here in the JPL auditorium to see the picture as it comes in.
The command has been sent to start the frame.
We'll know in a moment.
We anticipate that this, as we pointed out, this first frame may not be the best possible, but the frame has been started. We are receiving a picture. Video is being received.
Now, keep our eye on it. Here it comes, Dr. Urey. Here it comes.
Down the spacecraft.
A very soft picture.
The picture is now coming through.
Showing the footpad of the tripod and part of the spacecraft. There it is. One of the disc-like footpads.
Anticipated the contrast between the moon and the pad. Extremely clear picture of the pad on the spacecraft. And
an incredible succession of scientific firsts from Surveyor Moon. Surveyor 1 on the moon.
The first pictures from Surveyor 1 were sent around the United States by live television. They were relayed to Britain and Western Europe by the Early Bird communications satellite. Now, New Zealand and Australia got the pictures by newspaper cable links and published in newspapers the next morning on June the 3rd, there being no possibility of live television from the United States in 1966. However, there were a few lucky people near Canberra, as we shall hear later in this evening's The Space Show, that were able to get the pictures sooner than that.
Success on top of success in unending stream. That's been the almost unexpected picture here at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Successful landing, nothing damaged, every command obeyed. A series of low-resolution 200-line pictures of the moon. Then, 3.5 hours after touchdown, a series of fantastic high-resolution 600-line pictures of the spacecraft and of the lunar surface. The immediate conclusion, the surface of the moon, here at least, can support a manned landing and the footsteps of a man on space.
So that was Surveyor 1. Successful on the first try. Now, there were 7 surveyors in all. As we heard, Surveyor 1 was in 1966, June the 2nd. It landed and sent back 11,150 pictures. It was followed on September the 20th of 1966, but it crashed into the moon. Surveyor 3, 1967, April the 17th launch, landed and sent back 6,315 photos. It carried a scoop which was able to dig up some of the soil and test how hard it was and give us some understanding of the soil. Yeah. And interestingly enough, it was visited by the crew of Apollo 12. That's Pete Conrad and Alan Bean. And they stepped out of their lunar module and walked over to the Surveyor 3. That was in 1969 November. They actually brought back a piece of the Surveyor as well, back to Earth. Surveyor 4 was launched in 1967, July the 14th, but it crashed. Surveyor 5, 1967, September the 8th, was launched. After landing, it returned 18,000 photographs, and it also did a chemical soil analysis. Surveyor 6, in 1967, November the 7th, that was a launch, and it returned 30,000 pictures after landing. Interestingly enough, it later hopped up 3 metres vertically and 2.4 metres sideways using its vernier rocket engines. As such, it was the first object ever to be launched off the moon, albeit only up to a height of 3 metres before landing again. The final Surveyor, number 7, was launched on January the 7th of 1968. It returned 21,000 photographs. It did a chemical soil analysis, and it also had a scoop. Now, while all this was going on, Mike Dinn was the Deputy Station Director of DSS 42 at Tidmanbilla. Now, DSS stands for Deep Space Station, and they were tracking Surveyor, sending commands to it, and all sorts of things. This is back in 1966. We caught up with Mike Dinn a few days ago. Peter Irwood had a conversation with him, and here's how that went.
And we're joined by Mike Dinn, all the way from Canberra. Welcome, Mike, to the Space Show and the Space Association. I understand there's an important anniversary happening this month. Would you like to tell us a bit about that and your part in it?
Yes, well, thank you, Peter. We're just coming up to the 50th anniversary of the landing of Surveyor 1, NASA's, America's first soft landing on the moon, June the 2nd. It's very memorable for me because it was the first space mission of significance that I was associated with. I started at Tidmanbilla in February 1966, after having worked 5 years at Laverton on aircraft flight testing. Turned up in Canberra on Decimal Currency Day, 14th of February 1966, and Surveyor 1 was my first mission. The picture, which I happen to have now, but is of the Surveyor spacecraft. It's a three-legged device with two omni antennas, a high-gain antenna, a solar panel, television camera, built by Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles. It took quite a few years to get itself to that stage. There were quite a few missed starts and a few failures. But anyway, Surveyor 1 launched at the end of May 1966.
It looks like it's on the beach there, Mike.
It does.
Missed landing or what?
I think this particular photograph was probably taken at White Sands, New Mexico. They did a number of drop tests to check out the landing radar and the retro engine and the verniers, obviously doing it in 1G gravity. So that had been checked out to the extent you can in a 1G environment. So the role of the tracking station here in Canberra was at what's called Tidmanbilla, the Tidmanbilla Deep Space Station, also known as the Deep Space Instrumentation Facility in those days. We were one of the three stations around the world that tracked Surveyor. The other deep space station in Australia at that time was at Woomera, or near Woomera, Deep Space Station 41. It, however, was working with Lunar Orbiter, which was in many ways equally important to Surveyor. That was taking detailed in-orbit pictures for the mission. There was a precursor to this soft landing, and that was Ranger, which was a lunar impact mission. Again, this was one of the first that JPL, the Americans, NASA, ran. It started in about 1961. They had many failures. In fact, their very first attempt didn't even hit the moon at all. It missed it entirely. But eventually, they had some very good results, ending up with pictures that were down to about a 20 centimeter resolution. And in the end, as I say, after an awful lot of problems, everyone was reasonably happy with that. The Ranger spacecraft had solar panels only, it didn't have any other power source. But it worked quite well, and it used what was called the L-band tracking system in those days.
And that just orbited the moon, yeah?
No, it was a hard, it just hit it.
Oh, it
bang,
oh, I
crash.
See. Okay.
The lunar orbiter, which came later, and it came in along in parallel with Surveyor, did the orbiting. Although the Americans were Surveyor was the first American mission to land, they'd been beaten by the Russians, which I'm sure was to the chagrin of a great deal of my colleagues in NASA. Luna 9 landed in January 66, and it operated for about 7 hours, and it did show some pictures of the lunar surface. So certainly the Russians were first, although the Surveyor certainly became a far longer-term mission. And I'm not aware of any other Russian landings other than that Luna 9. There might have been, but I'm not aware of them.
The Luna 9 was the first landing on the moon, as we've described earlier on, but there were other lunars that went and landed on the moon. Luna 13 launched in 1966, December the 21st, and landed on December the 24th. It sent back panoramic pictures and also carried a soil density meter and found soil similar to medium-density terrestrial soils. Also aboard Luna 13 was a radiation density meter, which analyzed soil composition using gamma rays, and it operated until December the 30th. There were other lunar craft as well from the Soviet Union. There were two lunar rovers. They landed on Luna 17 and Luna 21 and were called Lunokhod 1 and Lunokhod 2 respectively. And they roved around the moon for quite some time. And there were three lunar sample return missions successfully sent to the moon. Luna 16, Luna 20 and Luna 24. And there were several failures as well. Luna 23 actually landed successfully, but the soil sampler was damaged, and so it was unable to return samples back to Earth. Well, we go back now to Mike Dinn, our conversation.
Look, moving on to what the objectives of Surveyor was, it had three primary objectives. They had hoped to do a lot of science on the spacecraft, but it came down basically to an engineering and a demonstration mission, demonstrate that the Atlas Centaur rocket combination could work okay, and that was going to be quite an achievement because there hadn't really been a successful all-up Centaur launch, certainly not a reignite of the Centaur in Earth orbit. And the next major objective was to show that they could do mid-course and terminal maneuvers and actually land on the moon. And the third priority was to show that the deep space network could provide satisfactory communications with the spacecraft. But known in particular, there is no primary objective to take photographs or take images of the moon. Yeah. So that was looked on as maybe we might. No one expected it to be successful because it had all these problems, hence they kept it to these three primary objectives. So, Surveyor was launched on this Atlas Centaur combination in the end of May 66 from the Cape. The structure of the rocket was, as I have a picture that shows the Centaur being the second stage. The Centaur was of great interest in that it was liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen fuel, which is pretty fiendish to think about, putting into a tank and throwing up into orbit. And it took a long while to become reliable. However, it became a workhorse of the NASA launch system and is still in use today in a derivative. So although it started off with a lot of problems, it came out as a very productive rocket.
So that Centaur was used to get into Earth orbit and then reignited to get the spacecraft to the moon?
Well, yes and no. That was the intent. That was the original intent. A little bit like Apollo, where you go into lunar orbit and then you do a second burn to go on trajectory. Because Atlas Centaur 8, AC-8, was meant to demonstrate that, but failed. They decided to have a direct launch or a direct trajectory without a parking orbit. Mm-hmm. So there is a picture of the trajectory from the Earth to the Moon, which involved that direct launch, and then the spacecraft got its orientation by pointing at the Sun on one axis and Canopus star on the other axis. They did a thing called a mid-course correction to ensure it hit the Moon and arrived at the desired target. And it took about 60-odd hours to get to the Moon. And when it got to within 60 miles of the Moon, then it initiated its landing sequence. So the landing sequence involved the ignition of a retro rocket, and the spacecraft stabilized by three what they call vernier engines.
Now, as I mentioned before, the early Surveyor 1, the pictures were sent out around the United States by live television. But back in those days, things weren't digital. They were analog. And so how would you get some of the pictures? Well, the folks at Tidbinbilla had a rather novel way of doing so. And Mike Dinn picks up that story now.
And we're back with Mike Dinn. We've just witnessed Surveyor 1 landing on the Moon, and now the spacecraft on the Moon. Pick us back up there, Mike.
Well, here it is. So this is actually Surveyor 3 on the Moon, the one that the Apollo 12 astronauts went and visited, but it shows the major components, the Omni antennas, the high-gain antenna, the solar panel, TV camera, the vernier engines, and the three landing pads. Except that Surveyor 3 had a surface sampler scoop digger on it. And then shortly after landing, we started taking pictures. We got a number of Polaroids. All the pictures came down, relatively slow scan. They were recorded on 70mm film. They were also recorded on magnetic tape. And for quick look purposes, we had Polaroids pictures. We had three tracking stations, as I said, the Canberra one, Madrid, and also Johannesburg, South Africa were involved, and Goldstone. Once you're outside about 10,000 or 13,000 kilometres, those stations can see deep space, including the Moon, continuously. We had this network of Goldstone Lake in California, Tidbinbilla, and Johannesburg with Madrid. As I said earlier, the Woomera station was busy tracking lunar orbiter and dedicated lunar orbiter during this period. There are three tracking stations around Canberra in this era: Tidbinbilla, which is still here, by the by, the Apollo station about 30 kilometres south, and the Auroral Valley tracking station, which handled Earth orbiting spacecraft. The latter two sites are still visitable, but it's just the foundations now. But Tidbinbilla is very big and very active still. It comprised one antenna, one operations building, one powerhouse, and one sleeping canteen area. It was modified when Apollo came along, added another wing for the Apollo electronics. And if you look at it on Google Earth now, you'll see about six or eight antennas, but this is as it was in the 60s. Mm. It comprised a transmitting system, a receiving system, and a navigation system. Navigation being where you extract the speed and the range to the spacecraft. That was done with great precision, dependent on a very accurate timing system, frequency system. Best in the Southern Hemisphere it was at that point in time. The equipment in that era was analog and involved a lot of people operating a lot of equipment. And by operating, I mean pushing buttons and putting jacks in the right hole, switches, knobs, meters, oscilloscopes. The modern electronic engineer person would hardly know much about any of this, because it's all done in general today by one person. So the picture I happen to have here is about 20 people who would have all been on shift during all these Apollo missions. My boss, Bob Leslie, the station director, was in charge in this era.
On the Space Show, we've been chatting with Mike Dinn, who was the deputy station director of the Deep Space Station No. 42 at Tidbinbilla. The Surveyor craft paved the way to the moon. They proved, as Mike has said there, that the soil was strong enough to support a lunar landing craft and that people could walk on the moon. And interesting to note that in that earlier commentary from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, mention was made of Gemini 9. Now, Gemini 9, one of the people on board that was Gene Cernan, who ended up being the last man on the moon. And what a night it was last night when Gene was right here in our broadcast area. He gave a question and answer session after the film The Last Man on the Moon at the Astor Cinema. And we all got, many of us got to shake his hand and have our photograph taken with him. And we're going to go out now with some music from that film. It's called Alphonsus, the music by Lorne Balfe from the original motion picture soundtrack, The Last Man on the Moon. 50 years ago, Gene Cernan being launched into orbit by an Atlas rocket as part of the Mercury program, Gemini 9.